Deacon Gary and I were out looking at a book, a resource. We were talking about the Strong's not being so strong at times when looking at certain words. And there are better resources out there. And we were looking at a couple that are in the library here. And I got the sense that, you know, it's kind of taking me back to a time at a feast. When, you know, at the feast we do a lot of studying. We drink in of that spiritual food. And we eat not only the physical, but we eat the spiritual food as well. And we had some visitors here a while back. We had kept the feast with as well at a particular Feast of Tabernacles site. And having them here for a few days was like being at the feast. It really brought back some good memories. And there are good memories to be had at the feast. And one in particular, the Feast of Tabernacles, is a good feast to be in attendance with and fellowship with in worship to Yahweh. And certainly there are those that I think have come to a feast not for the proper and right reason. We need to come to the feast and to the weekly Sabbath and these appointed times in worship to Yahweh, not just physical fellowship, spiritual fellowship that we have among us, but the focus needs to be on Yahweh. That is first and foremost. Now, the coming kingdom is something that the world is in need of, a time when Yahweh's law will be enforced for all, a time when there will be true peace and true prosperity, a time that is ahead of us, a reality for those trusting and loving the Father's word, which promises a thousand-year rule on this earth. His kingdom, with Yahshua as king, will have no end, but will last forever and ever. This is the promise of numerous scriptures found in both the Old and New Testaments. It is alluded to in the Feast of Tabernacles, which is one of the most joyous feasts that Yahweh has for his people and all those that will keep it holy. It is a time for reflection also of what it must have been like for the Israelites as they left Egypt behind, as they went forward to worship Yahweh at the location he presented to them. And each year we are presented with a location. And in fact, there are a number of locations actually we could go to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Well, let's go back to Leviticus chapter 23 and read about this feast, this particular feast of Yahweh. Leviticus 23 and starting in verse 33. Again, Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel, saying, on the 15th of this seventh month is the Feast of Booths." Your translation may say something different. This is the New American Standard. It says the Booths. And we understand that as basically a temporary dwelling. But on the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days to Yahweh. On the first day is a holy convocation. You shall do no laborious work of any kind. So it's like a weekly Sabbath. But this is a special Sabbath. It's a high Sabbath. Verse 36, for 7 days you shall present an offering by fire to Yahweh. On the eighth day you shall have a holy convocation and present an offering by fire to Yahweh. It is an assembly. You shall do no laborious work. So we find that there are offerings by fire. Now we come here and give offerings. We don't stand here with a lighter, you know, lighting up something to burn and to offer by fire. But it is something that was done before. Now we find that these physical sacrifices were put in abeyance, these burnt offerings and these type of things of animals. But we do offer up sacrifices. We offer up, in a spiritual sense, incense, actually. And it is a pleasing aroma to Yahweh. And we also come before Yahweh not empty-handed, but actually with an offering. And that can be an offering by fire because it takes work to gather an offering. And as we are blessed, we are to bless Yahweh. That's a given. And we can bless each other, too, when we come to the feast. But the timing is specific. And that's why it's important for us to understand properly Yahweh's calendar. Because if we're not doing that, then we could be actually in disobedience to Yahweh by keeping the wrong time. These are appointed times. These are Moedim. They are specific. And we have to be careful because we're given a lot of instruction here. And it's to our advantage to study and to learn. And this is something that we do, of course, at Tabernacles. Let's go over to John 7 and 37. Now, in the Old Testament, the Feast of Tabernacles was kept. In the New Testament, the Feast of Tabernacles was kept. It's not something that was done away with. John 7 and verse 37, we find Yahshua actually spoke on this on the last great day. And basically what that is, I do think they call it a great day because it was such a joyous time to come together. And by the end of it, it was hard to actually go back to the respective places of where they lived. And, you know, coming together in worship to Yahweh is in fellowship, to study His Word, to do these things. It is just a joyous time to be in worship and to be alive. And really there is, I think, a lot of spirit of Yahweh when we come together for those times. But in John 7:37, we do find that there is a high day at the last day. It's actually a week-long celebration, but on the last day, which is actually falls on, I guess you could say, an eighth day, we have a high day, another Sabbath. And that's where Yahshua was here when he was speaking to those that were in attendance. But in John 7:37 it says, "Now on the last day, the great day of the feast, Yahshua stood and cried out, saying, 'If anyone is thirsty, let him come to me and drink.'" Now I was reading in Ryrie's notes here, and it's interesting. It says, though it is not mentioned in the Old Testament, the Jews had a ceremony of carrying water from the pool of Siloam and pouring it out in a silver basin by the altar of burnt offering each day for the first 7 days of the Feast of Booths. On the eighth day, this was not done, making Messiah's offer of the water of eternal life of himself even more startling. Now, this would have been for the Jews at that time. They did have this custom, evidently, but it wasn't necessarily a command. Now we do find that even in Acts 17 that we read today, Paul, as was his custom, went to the synagogue. And it wasn't just to meet with the Jews, interestingly enough, because if you go to Acts 18, it says that he was there with the Jews and the Greeks at the synagogue teaching. Interesting. So we find even today that the Feast of Tabernacles is not just a Jewish celebration. This is a celebration for all who would be in worship and would want to honor Yahweh. And I think that's what we're here for. We're wanting to obey Him. We're wanting to honor Him. We want to give Him the glory. And in doing so, we want to do what He tells us to do. And isn't it said that, you know, to love Him is to obey Him? So we... to keep His commandments. So, you know, if we love Him, we'll do these things. We find, going back to John 7 and verse 14, Yahshua wasn't just there for the last day. He's also there in the midst of the feast. John 7:14 says, "But when it was now in the midst of the feast, Yahshua went up into the temple and began to teach." Now, it's true that there's no temple today, but didn't Yahshua say that, you know, even to the woman at the well, and we can take a look at that, but didn't He say to her that, you know, neither at this mountain nor at the temple will, or at Jerusalem, at the temple, will we be worshiping. So things have changed a little bit. And even the Apostle Paul said that there's a change in the law, but not a doing away with it. Well, we find in Zechariah 14, a future reference to the Feast of Tabernacles in the coming kingdom. So we've looked at the Old Testament where it was kept. We've looked in the New Testament where it was kept. Now we're looking in the reference prophecy to the coming kingdom, future ahead of us, where it will be kept. Zechariah 14 and verse 16. Then it will come about that any of those who are left of the nations that went against Jerusalem will go up from year to year to worship the King, Yahweh of hosts, and to celebrate the Feast of Booths. And it will be that whichever of the families of the earth does not go up to Jerusalem to worship the King, Yahweh of hosts, there will be no rain on them. If the family of Egypt, again, I mean, we're talking about not just Jews keeping this, not just the Jews' feast, it's for everyone. Verse 18 says, if the family of Egypt does not come up or enter, then their rain will, there will be no rain that will fall on them. And it will be a plague with which Yahweh smites nations who do not come up to celebrate the Feast of Booths. Nations, plural. Doesn't matter who you are. If you're at the, if you're in the kingdom, when the law is enforced, then you will keep the feast, or you will receive immediate judgment and punishment for that. I think many times people do things today, and we see them getting away with murder, basically. But they are not really getting away with anything. Yahweh will have justice, and He will provide justice for people. And many times that includes punishment. But do we go out to the desert or to Jerusalem today to keep the feast? Let's go over to John 4 and take a look at that scripture where Yahshua is talking to the woman at the well. There was a Samaritan woman, which was interesting because there was a tradition that the Jews wouldn't talk to Samaritan women or Samaritans in general. They were in disdain. But you know, in fact, even in verse 9, it says the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. But here, Yahshua is talking to a Samaritan, so he's breaking through some of the traditions that were held and showing the right way of those wrong ways that had been done. But in John 4:21, Yahshua said to this woman, "Woman, believe me, an hour is coming when neither in this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father." And I think we are in that time period when the temple doesn't exist, where we can come together and where two are gathered together in His name. There He is among us. And we have the eldership, of course, which helps decide where a feast site will be, where Yahweh's name will be. And then a call goes out to gather. We don't actually blow the trumpet necessarily, but I guess you could say that we do when we call, when we write, and when we put together the feast program. It's an invitation. This message is an invitation. Come to the feast. If at all possible, come to the feast. Now, I've been at feast sites where there have been, and was not uncommon to have 800, 1,000 people at the feast. And there are a number of groups that do keep the feast. They recognize that these are appointed times of Yahweh, but they don't recognize the Father's name. Some may, but they don't really use it readily. I mean, the commentaries are replete with Yahweh's name today. And so, I mean, we can go back into the library here and open up a number of books and most likely find Yahweh's name in most of them. It's that prevalent at this point. But as Elder John brought out last Sabbath, there are those religious organizations that are taking a stand, a defiant stand against the name, and are saying to their clergy, to their leaders, don't use it. What Yahweh must feel about that, it's hard to comprehend. But I feel sorry for them, actually, because they're missing out. They're putting away the the seal, in a sense. If you do a study, you find that the Sabbaths are actually a sign, but the name is actually a seal. Now, it's true that we are sealed with the Spirit within us, but that gives us an energy and a help for the understanding of Yahweh's Word. And it's just quite amazing what we see. And for my background, my experience, I see that when you come closer to having a lot of truth, you lose a lot of people. I mean, I've been at feast sites where there's been 800 people. In fact, I remember, I'm going to go and meet 20 people today. I didn't get past 5. But that's all right, because the connections there were they had some depth, and they weren't just superficial meetings of minds. But you know, a lot of those people that I've known are probably still keeping the feast. And I think when society comes down to having this new world order, having the mark of the beast, I don't think they'll take the mark. I really don't. And I think they will be in a better position to accept the name when it comes right down to it at that time. Of course, Zechariah 13 talks about they'll be calling, those that will be coming into the kingdom. Of course, those that will be coming in the kingdom will not have received the mark of the beast. And the discussions can go back and forth on that, whether it's a physical mark or a spiritual mark. Quite frankly, I think it will probably be both, because I do think we are marked spiritually, but I also think that this society of ours can mark us physically for their purpose. And we're at a time in history when it's just now, we're now able to actually put a mark on everyone, number everyone, and have that system implemented. You know, is the economic troubles we see globally right now, is that going to get worse? Is it going to get better? Maybe it'll get better for a while. But if it gets worse, what's going to happen? Will that usher in this mark of the beast? Interesting. I'm not sure exactly how it's all going to be played out. But I do think there are some very dedicated people out there, but who are still blind to the full understanding of how important Yahweh's name is and how it needs to be used and not just known. But experience shows that smaller groups do provide more of a family atmosphere. I think all of us here have more opportunity to grow spiritually, because we are forced to work with one another, deal with one another. And you know, I remember attending a congregation that was 350 in size, and I attended that congregation for a number of years. And there would be, you know, there would be certain people you would get close to, and that would be pretty much it. You'd look for them when you come in, and you kind of get to a point where you tend to avoid the others in general. And so these little cliques form. Well, here we don't really get that opportunity because there's so few of us. So really when we're coming together, it's more of a family. I really do feel that way. And there are difficulties in family, but there are also great blessings in family. And so we have the opportunity to grow and to be a family, a true family, with Yahweh's Spirit guiding us. Now, I think I digressed long enough. Let's get back to this keeping of the feast. Do we have to travel to keep to the feast, or to keep this feast? Let's go back to Hosea. Was I getting sentimental? Yeah. Well, I tell you, it's hard to see some of the things come about. I'd like to see, you know, this room filled. I think it has the potential to be filled. And it may be that in time it will be full. So full that we will not be able to, have everyone sitting. It'll be standing room only. But that time is yet ahead of us, I do believe. And it may take the tribulation to really bring that about. But there are going to be teachers that are going to need to know some of these things to be able to help those that have not known these things, have not been doing these things, to help them to understand how to do these things. But in Hosea 12 and verse 9, But I have been Yahweh your Elohim since the land of Egypt. I will make you to live in tents again, as in the days of the appointed festival. So there, you know, it's Yahweh's goodwill to allow us to be sojourning, to be not necessarily in one place all the time. And I do think that we see that at the feast we are to travel. Let's go back to Exodus. Let's do a little bit of a word study. Exodus chapter 23, going to verse 14. It says, 3 times a year you shall celebrate a feast to me. You shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. For 7 days you are to eat unleavened bread, as I commanded you, at the appointed time in the month of Abib. For in it you came out of Egypt. Excuse me. And none shall appear before me empty-handed. Also you shall observe the Feast of Harvest. We understand that's Feast of Weeks, Pentecost, in the Greek as it's called. But of the first fruits of your labors from which you sow in the field, also the Feast of Ingathering, the Feast of Booths, the Feast of Tabernacles. Some different names for it, but basically means feast of temporary dwellings. But in the Feast of Ingathering at the end of the year, when you gather in the fruit of your labors from the field, 3 times in a year all your males shall appear before Yahweh Elohim. So we get a sense that there is some traveling here because we're supposed to go before Yahweh, to appear before Him. Now, this does say all males, but there are females as well that come to the feast because their husbands don't, for example, but they've decided that they will, and the husband is okay with that, so they come. And hopefully with time, the husband will see the good fruit of that and witness that. And by going to the feast, I mean, we are witnesses. We're witnessing when we ask for time off. People, it gives us an opportunity to talk about that. But the word times here, it's in a couple places. Verse 14 of Exodus 23, the second word there is times in this translation. In verse 17, the second word again is times. But they're two different words. They're translated from two different words. But interestingly enough, the two words mean basically the same thing. The first word is from Strong 7272, and it is regal, Resh Gimel Lamed. And it has the meaning of like foot, leg, journey. The other word is pa'am, and it's from Strong 6471. It also has meaning of like footstep, hoofbeat. You ever hear the term hoofing it? It means like a beat, a stroke, strokes or steps. And that's what we're seeing here. There are times, but they're traveling times. And I think it's important to not only see this in context, but to understand what these words are saying, because it does give a deeper meaning to the understanding that we could have. Now, Deacon Gary and I were looking up Rosh, and another word there, F, I think, which basically meant his head. And in context, you could see his head had been cut off, which wasn't necessarily the best thing to see, but in context it was clear. But there was a little bit of a deeper meaning to the word eth, that it was in essence, not just identifying that it was the persons, but in context, it came out. And then the head, that of course was pretty self-explanatory. So we do see that this is a sojourning time, the Feast of Tabernacles. Also, Pentecost is a time when we're to sojourn, we're to make special effort to travel to this appointed time and wherever Yahweh has placed his name. Again, Feast of Unleavened Bread, Passover, of course, is just before the Feast of Unleavened Bread, so that would be kept with other brethren at one location. Now, when I was in sales, I learned that there are conditions and there are objections. A condition is basically like you're in jail. There's no way you're getting out. Okay, and there are brethren that are in jail. They got hit upside the head, kind of like the Apostle Paul on the road to Damascus. In some cases, even more severe, but they're in prison and they are unable to go anywhere. But yet they've come to an understanding, hey, these are some things that we're to be doing. And so now they're trying to do what's right in Yahweh's sight, maybe for the first time in their life. And they're very dedicated. In fact, I think many prisoners are a lot more dedicated than I see others being. Because others will have what I would consider objections. Well, I don't feel like attending the feast this year. Or I have a relative that's going to have a wedding, so I can't come to the feast. It kind of sounds familiar. Let's go over to Matthew 22. Matthew 22 and verse 5. It's a parable that Yahshua spoke of. And it says in verse 2, "And the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who gave a wedding feast for his sons. And then he sent out his slaves to call those who had been invited to the wedding feast, and they were unwilling to come." They had objections. Verse 4, "Again he sent out other slaves, saying, or servants, saying, 'Tell those who have been invited, behold, I have prepared my dinner, my oxen, my fattened livestock, which are all butchered, and everything is ready. Come to the wedding feast.' But they paid no attention and went their way, one to his own farm, another to his business." They had objections. They did not have conditions. And there are conditions today. Health, prison, even financially. But Yahweh, I think we can take a look at, does allow us to have funds to come to the feast. So I guess what I'm saying is attendance is not an option. It really isn't. I almost thought about shaving off half my beard and coming in today to show how weird that would look. Because it looks weird to us to see others out there not coming to the feast when they're using Yahweh's name. And when they're claiming to be desiring to do Yahweh's will. But yet they are not fulfilling Yahweh's will. They are missing the mark. I think in many cases, or at least some cases, there is sin occurring. Because, I've heard not once, but twice, those that have contacted us seem to recognize the name, seem to recognize the Sabbath is important, but they both said, "I've got a wedding to go to." And they didn't come to the feast. And why are we keeping the feast? Isn't it in preparation for the wedding to come? It's in preparation. We are to work towards being prepared as a bride. In Revelation, it talks about that. The bride has made herself ready. We have a wedding feast to definitely attend. And I think the Feast of Tabernacles is a bit of preparation for that, in part. But I guess there are some priorities that we have to realize and some things we have to make sure that we're doing. First and foremost is honoring and serving Yahweh with all of our heart, mind, strength, our whole being. And second is to love our neighbor, to fellowship, to help, and to basically we need to come out of the world. And there are those that are objecting to that, I think, in part. We are not to object. We are not to come up with excuses saying, well, you know, I was wanting to save my second tithe this year, but I just didn't get to it. I got so busy with other things. But second tithe is something that will help us to allow us to come to the feast. So I guess the question is, can we afford to come to the feast? How about, can we afford not to? Go over to Proverbs 3 and verse 9. You know, we're talking about honoring Yahweh, to give Him glory, to serve Him, to do what's right in His sight. Proverbs 3 and verse 9 says, honor Yahweh with your wealth from the first of all your produce. Now, we're not in an agricultural society today, per se. Less than 2%, I think, of the population is actually in agriculture. Whereas before, it used to be like 98%. The numbers have reversed. But we find that we still have an increase, and with that increase, we can honor Yahweh. Now, I think this is referring to this first tithe, the first tenth of our increase. Of course, we give offerings. We give of our the blessings that we've received, a portion of those. But there is a second tithe. Let's go over to Deuteronomy 14. Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 22. You shall surely tithe all the produce from what you sow, which comes out of the field every year. You shall eat in the presence of Yahweh your Elohim at the place where He chooses to establish His name. The tithe of your grain, your new wine, your oil, the firstborn of your herd, and your flock, in order that you may learn to fear Yahweh your Elohim always. So it's another reason to attend the feast, to learn how to fear Yahweh. And it's the fear of Yahweh that helps us to be obedient, to respect Him, to honor Him. Verse 24, if the distance is so great that you are not able to bring the tithe, since the place where Yahweh your Elohim chooses to set His name is too far from you, when Yahweh your Elohim blesses you, then you shall exchange it for money and bind the money in your hand and go to the place. Go to the place. Sojourning. Actually traveling to. Verse 26, you may spend the money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen, sheep, wine, strong drink, whatever your heart desires, and there you shall eat in the presence of Yahweh your Elohim and rejoice, and your household. So ideally the children are to come, and servants, back then there would have been servants, these type of things, the whole household. But the tithe is to be saved throughout the year and then is to be used at the feasts, plural. We have Pentecost, we have Feast of Unleavened Bread that was mentioned. But the Feast of Booths, the Feast of Tabernacles, and there are those that bring tents, there are those that bring campers, there are those that bring trailers, motorhomes. We have temporary lodging. It's a campground, basically, that we go to. Now, this is something different than what I had been used to, because when you get 800, 1,000 people together to keep the feast, you're going to hotels, motels. At least this is how it was done before with this particular group that I was with. And people knew we were coming into town. They had big signs. You don't think that they would have gone out of their way. We were bringing a lot of money into that part of the country. And there were a number of feast sites. I would say that there was pretty much a feast site in every state. And some would go travel to Hawaii. Some would travel to the Caribbean because there were enough people dedicated understanding that, hey, point of time, Yahweh says, come before me with praise and joy and happiness. This is an appointed time. And they would go. Why the name is so hard for them at this time, I just don't understand. But it must be because Yahweh is not fully lifting the veil from their eyes on the names. And yet we find it so important, just as important, if I'm thinking more important actually than the feast, if you could categorize them. But if you break one, you break them all. And so we have scriptures in Psalm 113, other scriptures that talk about honoring Yahweh's name, giving glory to Him. But we find definitely instructions also to keep the feast. And, that second tithe is important. And we are to honor Yahweh, I think, with the second tithe as well. Not just the first tithe. Not just with offerings, but with obedience to Him so that we can be further obedient to Him. It's just important. And there are those that understand this. And getting back to the big signs, I mean, I remember, in bright, shining letters, Feast of Tabernacles, 1995 or whenever the year was, welcome. And the community would know. And the community was witness to about these appointed times. And there have been, I don't want to digress too much, but, it's just important. That's the point. It's important. I mean, there's no getting around it. Yahweh's name is important. His feast days are important. What He tells us to do is important. And if we don't do it, that's important too. It's important for us to understand we better do what He says, because there are blessings and cursings still presented. And just as the Feast of Tabernacles was kept in the Old Testament, it's kept in the New, will be kept in the Kingdom, it's mentioned that if you don't, then there's going to be trouble. Let's go over to Deuteronomy 15, and do we finish up here? Let's go to, did I read verse 26? Let's go to verse 26 of Deuteronomy 14. You may spend the money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen, sheep, wine, strong drink, whatever your heart desires, and there you shall eat in the presence of Yahweh your Elohim and rejoice, and you and your household. It was a joyous time. And I do think when we talk about the last great day, it was called the last great day because you're at an apex. You're at a peak of enjoyment, of happiness. After you're there for 7, 8 days, it's just a joyous time. And the memories are so strong, as I said, that when you do certain things, the memory comes and you remember and those good feelings come back. And whether it's studying with a brother, or whether it's fellowshipping, these memories come back. Let's go over to Deuteronomy 15 and verse 11. Yahweh tells us to help those that might not be able to save enough second tithe. I mean, there are instances where saving second tithe all year is not possible. There are certain conditions. Mind you, not objections. There are conditions which can't be necessarily overcome. But it says, for the poor will never cease to be in the land. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy and poor in your land. Verse 14, you shall furnish him liberally from your flock and from your threshing floor and from your wine vat, and you shall give to him as Yahweh your Elohim has blessed you. So, I don't think it's a light matter to ignore the poor that we see among the brethren. I think it's important that we extend a helping hand, even if it's, in a non-financial way, but also in a financial way. And you know, Yahweh can bring it to your mind as you see a need. And I think many times he does. So if you do not have enough second tithe and you want to keep the feast this year, give us a call. We're here to help and provide. And Yahweh does provide. It's really not our doing. It's Yahweh's doing. But the Feast of Tabernacles is likened to a vacation because it is a joy and a time to relax. But it's also a time to study and to be fed spiritually and not just physically, though that is one of the other benefits of the feast. Good food and plenty of it. It's a witness to the world when we take time off from work and other things to keep the feast. It opens up doors of communications that we wouldn't otherwise have. Just being obedient to Yahweh opens up doors. I don't know if you've ever thought of that, but it's true. The memories and lessons taken from the feast continue with us for the rest of our lives. And we are trusting that those experiences will help prepare us to enter the eternal kingdom of Yahweh. Keep the feast. Leviticus chapter 26 and Deuteronomy chapter 28 tells us there will be blessings if we do. May Yahweh bless. Come to the feast.